you know, it's like soundproof, so you walk in and it's like, once they close the door, it's like, oh, this is what it must be like in space.
Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith and the next voice you'll hear is John Steele. John, how are you?
Hi Stuart, very well, thanks. Good to be back. 4 games to go in J2, so squeaky bum time for quite a few teams, I believe.
You're not wrong there, both at the top and at the bottom of the table. So this week, we're going to have a look forward to this weekend's coming action. The games are split between Saturday, Sunday, and one on Monday this coming week. But first, unfortunately for myself, we have to start with tonight's game in Kagoshima, which was billed as a kind of must-win game for both teams, Kagoshima United versus FC Gifu. Kagoshima United won with a goal from Lukao with the last kick of the game. It sends Kagoshima onto 36 points. Gifu stranded at the bottom on 30 points. There's 4 games left, John, and there's 6 points between the teams. Do you think that Gifu are done?
With apologies to yourself, Richie, and the rest of the Gifu sympathising listeners, Stuart, I think, yeah, being 6 points behind with 4 games to go is going to be too big a gap, not just for Gifu, but for Tochigi as well, who are on the same points as Gifu, aren't they, 30. And I don't really see the 2 relegation places changing. I think it would be good for the league to have a bit more of a competitive relegation dogfight, if you like. And I just think Gifu could still win a game or two. Tochigi could still win a game or two. But no, I think 6 points difference with 4 games, just too much. And it doesn't help that neither Tochigi nor Gifu are actually playing particularly impressive football. They're not exactly in form, are they? So the idea of 2 wins coming in the last 4 games, not very likely. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of Gifu supporters are putting a brave face on, saying, "Oh, there's still 4 games left." I mean, and it's true that this league is very unpredictable. But what's not, Gifu have been bottom for a long time. Like there's, and for some reason I had the utmost confidence that Gifu would win tonight. I really thought they would, but I just think that they've been in a rut for so long that you just can't expect them to just click their fingers and snap out of it. And I think that while a lot of supporters are putting a brave face on it, I think the reality will come on Saturday when Gifu host Tokushima, a team that have won 8 of their last 11 and they're unbeaten in that sequence of games as well. And so think that, I think it's more or less done. And I'd be amazed if Gifu finished outside of the relegation zone. The only thing I might be able to say is that Fujieda is still up and about in J3. I think they're second at the moment. Should they finish in the top 2, then either one of Tochigi or Gifu will be safe. But yeah, I mean, Tochigi and Gifu, as far as the eye can see, they've been in the bottom 2 or bottom 3. And Kagoshima needed to pull out a win tonight. And I think I remember you saying, when Mito won at Kashiwa, the roar of the Mito crowd when their winning goal went in was kind of reminiscent of a proper, quote-unquote, proper European kind of crowd celebrating a goal. I think if you get a chance to listen to the reaction when Lukao scores, I think that is very, very reminiscent of an injury time goal, like in an Old Firm game or in a Grimsby Town Scunthorpe derby or a Stoke Port Vale game or whichever one we want to drop in there. But yeah, like true kind of release of emotion, which was, I mean, as a neutral it sounded great, but I wasn't a neutral, so it didn't sound very good to me on that.
There was a couple of those authentic European style roars, if you like, at a couple of other grounds at the weekend, because I think fans, you know, when it gets J2 is so complicated, so many permutations, it really is sometimes only when it gets down to the last four games that you kind of you can comfortably celebrate a goal, knowing what it actually does mean.
Yeah,
and I think on Kagoshima, that's you know, they're four games unbeaten now, which is pretty good for a team which we've commented on a couple of times as being pretty terrible this season. And you know, I guess in that unbeaten run, yes, it's three straight draws and then a win against Gifu, but it still gives me food for thought that even if Gifu and Tochigi do get a result or two from somewhere, I'm not convinced now that Kagoshima are going to stay on 36 points. I think they might have a bit of confidence and momentum to go and get maybe another win, or at least a couple of draws over the last month of the season. And that should almost inconceivably, really, when you consider how poor they have been for a lot of the season, I think they'll just about be safe by hook or by crook.
Yeah, well, that brings on nicely to the Saturday slate of games, because Kagoshima are in action on Saturday as they host Okayama. There are, like I said, there are five games, and we're going to take each game one by one individually, and some have more riding on them than others, as I'm pretty sure we'll come to see quickly. But we're going to touch on all the games, and we'll take them in chronological order. So on Saturday at 1 o'clock, it's Avispa Fukuoka versus Tokyo Verde. Is there anything we need to watch out for in this game?
I would think that anyone of a Fukuoka supporting persuasion would at least hope to see some kind of reaction from the pitiful display that they put in at Kashua in the last round, when they were beaten 4-0. And there's nothing wrong with getting hammered away at Kashua, because you know, it's pretty clear they're going to be the champions. But yeah, we talked a little bit about the state of the defending, the shift that Fukuoka put in that game was pretty dreadful. If I was a Fukuoka fan, I would expect at least an improvement of at least 1,000% for that game. So yeah, that's something to watch out for. I think it's been, just talking about the bottom five or six in the table, there's been some very poor sides down at the bottom this year. And I think Fukuoka can thank their lucky stars that, you know, Gifu, Tochigi and Kagoshima have been worse than them. And if they hadn't had Cervantes, you know, the Colossus in goal, I think it could have been an even more disappointing season. So I think, you know, just a couple of home games left. I really hope the players put a shift in for their fans who've suffered a lot this year.
Most definitely, I concur with that. I mean, yeah, it wasn't so long ago. I think they were. They might have been the... I know when Gifu beat them in Fukuoka, they might have sent Fukuoka bottom. I might be hallucinating there, but... anyway, yeah, I agree with they owe their fans a performance.
Just on that, I should mention that there will be the make-up game, the Omiya versus Fukuoka games coming up on Tuesday night next midweek. Ooh, so there is a possibility, I think, of Fukuoka maybe shuffling the pack in terms of team selection. But it'll be difficult to know if that's a reaction to such a bad performance in the previous game or if players are being rested with the Omiya game in mind. I don't know. I think that they're more likely to prioritise the Verde game, in my view.
I think they would be as well, yeah.
Yeah, so that could have implications at the top of the table. Omiya might be facing a weakened, inverted commas, weakened Fukuoka side on Tuesday night next week.
Perish the thought of that. I mean, that brings us on nicely to Omiya, because you're just speaking about Omiya. And at 2 o'clock, yeah, they're hosting Kashiwa Reysol in what... looks to be, on paper, the sexiest game of the weekend. Kashiwa Reysol atop. I think they are, what are they, 8 points clear of Yamagata and Yokohama. Omiya are fourth, but as you just mentioned, they've got a game in hand. And yeah, this is a true kind of, it's a true test for Omiya. They were beaten at home. I say home, they were beaten in Kumagaya last week by Tokushima Vortis. And yeah, they can't... Can they afford two defeats in a row?
Well, I think they... they won this weekend, though, right? They they won 3-2 away.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking 2 weeks ago.
I understand the confusion because they seem to be involved in like a 5-goal
week
at the moment. Sometimes it goes their way and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, they won at Ryukyu. Yeah, Robin Simovic scored a beautiful.
Well, that was the first player. I mean, I think I've criticised Simovic, or I think we both mentioned he hasn't really been a good fit up front for Omiya this season.
Mm.
But I think if Zlatan had scored that goal, it would have launched a thousand tweets, wouldn't it? So
yeah.
That was an absolutely incredible goal. And Ipe Shinazuka was also very influential in that game, a player we've mentioned a few times as well. So yeah, I think I'm pretty confident saying that this Omiya versus Kashu game isn't going to be 0-0. I don't know if it'll be 3-2. If it is 3-2, I don't know which way it would go. But yeah, I think you're right to point out there's a lot more pressure on Omiya going into this game, because I think Kashua can afford to... they could afford another couple of slip-ups, couldn't they? Because they've got such a gap at the top. But yeah, for Omiya, if they could win, if they could get 3 points on Saturday, and then that takes them into the home game against Fukuoka Tuesday, 6 points out of six, then they've got three games left, and they'd be in the runs-up spot. That would give them something to hold on to, I think. So yeah, I think they'll be going well out to win that game. But Kashua are the best side by far, aren't they? So it'd be a very difficult assignment, and I think very intriguing game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Apologies for missing Omiya's winning in Okinawa. Yeah, I completely forgot.
And Steve Barnes started to tweet something, and he had to delete it now. So that's.
Put the phone down, Steve. Put the phone down. I think, this is a... it's obvious to say it's a huge game. I think, psychologically, if Omiya win, I think it will set them up really nicely. And I think that, it'll put a lot of pressure on... It will put a lot of pressure on the other teams. It'll also put a bit of pressure on them, on themselves, to beat Fukuoka. J2 can have a nasty habit of biting you in the ass when you least expect it, and it would be incredibly J2 for Omiya to beat Kashua then not beat Fukuoka. There's a high possibility of that, I would say. But it's the kind of game that sets the neutrals' eyes watching it, and so I think it'll be a good game. Yeah, I doubt it will be 0-0, but like you said, the last three games that Omiya have had have all finished 3-2 to one of the sides, so
should be a good big crowd at a soccer specific stadium as well, so that's always good to see.
Yes, a big crowd at not a soccer-specific stadium might be the order of the day in Gifu. So another 2 o'clock kickoff. Gifu are hosting Tokushima Vortis. We've already spoken about Gifu. Let's give Ricardo Rodriguez's side a quick look through the magnifying glass. They're, like I just mentioned earlier, 11 unbeaten, 8 wins in that time, 3 draws, and they've won their last 3. Came from behind in their last game to beat, just let me rack my brain, who did they beat?
Oh, they beat Mito.
They did beat Mito, that was it. They came from behind to win. And yeah, they've hit form at exactly the right time. And instead of kind of just focusing on a playoff place, they might have designs further up. I mean, they're only 3 points off Montedio Yamagata in second place. This is quite the surge by Vortis, right?
Yeah, this is incredible. And they're playing, I think you mentioned confidence already, talking about teams down at the bottom, but I think it's just as important to the top. And usually in previous seasons, what happens around this stage is teams start to decide they don't really want to be in the playoffs and basically start shitting the bed left, right and centre. The situation we've got here, though, is like all of the teams in that top six are like form teams and playing well. And I think of the bunch, yeah, Tokushima Vortis are in form and playing the best. Nobody wants to play against them. Nobody wants to deal with them. You've got players like Naoki, Nomura in the form of their life, amongst many other standout performers. I think it's possible that they could go on and and pinch the automatic promotion. But I still make, I think at this point, Omiya or Yokohama FC probably, I don't know, more likely for me, it might just be my Kanto bias showing through. But yeah, I think Vortis, it was very, very important to win that game against Mito, and the fact that they came from behind to do it. You know, when you're in a good run of form already and you do that, you come from behind and beat a kind of playoff contender, I think it just adds to the kind of feel good factor. So yeah, I wouldn't bet against them. I'm sorry, Stu, I wouldn't bet against them winning again against Gifu on Saturday, and maybe yeah, nudging a little bit closer to the summit, really.
Yeah, I read that Tokushima, a company in Tokushima, have put on like four buses, like four sponsored buses to bring supporters to Gifu. I mean, I've done the bus trip from Nagoya to Tokushima before, and it takes around 5 hours or so. So it's no mean feat. I'm expecting quite a few Tokushima supporters to come. And a quick shout out to Geordie Boyce for his Spider-Man football boots. I don't know if you saw those the other day. They're pretty cool. Hopefully he brings them to Gifu. I might try and have a photograph taken with them. Just before we move on, the thing about Tokushima that I found surprising is that they share the goals out a lot. None of their players have hit double figures this year. The leading scorer is Atsushi Kawata. He's got 8. Then you've got Masaki Wata, you've got Boyce, you've got Naoki Nomura, Kiyotake. They've all got 6 goals. So there's no over-reliance on one player, and they're kind of getting goals from, I mean, Boyce is a centre-back, Nomura is a midfielder by trade, Kiyotake plays just off the front man. I mean, Kawata's a forward himself, but yeah, Watai can often be found just deeper than the strikers. They share the goals out, and yeah, that's kind of a good way to be, I think. There's no over-reliance on one player.
Well, yeah, I think in the past, you know, this is an interesting point that you raise, because previous iterations of Tokushima under Ricardo Rodriguez have had a kind of talismanic forward, haven't they?
Yeah.
Like where Daiki Watari, you know, for example, in the past.
Peter Rutaka is the same.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see that maybe, I don't know, perhaps this season he looked at the personnel he had and was like, well, I haven't got a 20-goal man. So I have to play a slightly different way. And I think maybe the football that he likes to play lends itself to that kind of sharing the goals out system. But then it's funny, you know, you cast a glance a bit further down the table and there are teams with these 20 goal a season strikers, and they're not in the playoff picture. You know, I mean, even Kofu with Utaka and not looking too clever at the moment. And
Leonardo
and Kleber at Jeff has managed 17. Which, to be honest, is a golden boot effort, considering the shower of shit that he's had to deal with around him. So, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think in the past you'd say, well, you can't get promoted unless you've got a 20-goal-a-season striker. That's why they cost so much money, you know, in terms of transfer fees. But yeah, it's interesting to see that they're doing it a slightly different way. I do think something we've talked about in the past with Tokushima is there's a kind of fragility. It'll be interesting to see what happens if, and they're in great form at the moment, and very dangerous opponent. But yeah, they do have this habit of not quite finishing teams off sometimes when they're in front. I think the goal difference kind of bears testament to that. So yeah, I'm not sure if I'd be confident tipping them for automatic promotion, because I think they do have the potential to dominate games but not win them sometimes.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Because they do tend to make hard worker teams. I remember them coming from behind quite a lot of times, but they're on a sparkling run of form.
They often have games that, like, in terms of possession and passes, ball retention and chances, they've absolutely hammered the other team, and if it was a boxing match, they would have had to stop it. It's 2-1 at the end.
Well, I,
like, why have you not done more with the ball and the chances that you've created, you know?
Well, I do like the fact that when Tokushima come and win from behind, when the camera focuses on Ricardo Rodriguez. He's just given this huge vamos, like mouth into the ether, and I do like that. Maybe that's why he does it. He sets his team up to score late, just so he can.
I think credit to Rodriguez, because it did seem, I think, early on this season, and perhaps even up until a couple of months ago, that project was maybe coming to an end, and was kind of petering out. A little bit, so I think you've got to give him credit for sticking to it and turning it round is a bit too strong, but bringing them back into the promotion picture, I to be honest, I expected it to go more the other way and to see them slipping down to the other end of the table. So fair play to him, and I'm sure he's probably had preliminary discussions already. I'm sure the front office been like, yeah, if you want to stay next season, that's fine.
And I mean, speaking of someone who might not even be in J2 next year, like, I think it would be bad to lose Ricardo Rodriguez and Tokushima because they've played really well this season. But there's a long way to go yet. And one of the teams that are looking to oust Tokushima from the playoffs, Okayama, now they're heading to Kagoshima United. You've already spoken. You've already told us that Kagoshima are 4 unbeaten, coming into this game with confidence. Do you think there's a possibility that, you know, they might be after the Lord Mayor's show? They might have seen this Gifu game as the defining game of the year, and the emotional toll of that game might just make it difficult for them to raise themselves against Okayama?
I think that's very possible. From a J2 predictor's point of view, this is the definition of a trap game, I think, Stuart.
Yes.
Because I think I can see this going either way. I think the most likely outcome is probably a draw. Okayama were not very impressive in beating Tochigi 1-0 at home
in the last game. No, they weren't.
Header from a free kick. And yeah, they don't play the same way as Tokushima at all, but they do have this habit of maybe winning games, but not as well as they should. I think what I would say in Okayama's favour is Hayato Nakama was uncharacteristically quiet at the weekend, and so was Lee
Yongjae.
Yeah, so it's they're not usually quiet for 2 games in a row. And if, you know, as we mentioned many times, we're repeating ourselves. If they're firing, then and Kagoshima's sort of porous defence is going to have a really hard time coping with them. A lot will depend on just how much the game tonight is taken out of Kagoshima, to be honest. But I think they won't feel like they're out of the woods just yet. They'll want to play well and get a result. I can see a 0-0 or a 1-1 here. So we'll have to wait and see. But that one is a very difficult game to call, I think. I don't know how you see it going.
Yeah, I actually think Okayama might win that. I think Okayama laboured against Tochigi. If you only saw the all goals show, then you wouldn't have seen an Okayama defender saving the ball on the goal line with his hand that wasn't seen by the referee. And I think they can count themselves pretty lucky to get away with a win there. But I think, yeah, Lee Yongjae and Hayato Nakama, they've got 33 goals between them this year. And I think that they're the kind of, if they're anywhere near on their game, I think they'll beat Kagoshima. I think they'll be a bit too clinical for them, I think. The last game on Saturday is another 3 o'clock kickoff, and it's in Mito. Mito, who are sliding, well, they've slid all the way out of the playoffs. They're in 8th place now, and they're hosting Montedio Yamagata. And Yamagata are fresh off a 3-0 win against Ehime that was aided and abetted by 2 goals from beyond the halfway line. It even made news in the UK because I know Sky Sports News tweeted it out saying, get back in your place, goalkeeper. I don't want to talk about Ehime's goalkeeper too much, but it was pretty average. Let's put it bluntly like that. it was bad. And that's all that needs to be said, right? Yeah. We should mention he's
everybody needs to watch the highlights.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We can't do it justice.
We cannot see the
highlights this game, yeah.
What do you think about this then? So Yamagata flying at the moment, second place, got the better goal difference than Yokohama FC. Mito Hollyhock, I feel they're in the last chance saloon. I feel if they lose another game, that's going to be a really difficult problem to overcome for them.
I think it's funny looking at the table and seeing Mito in eighth, and they're only 2 points away from a playoff place, as you mentioned. That being said, I think they must win this game against Yamagata on Saturday.
I agree.
I think even a draw is just going to keep the kind of sap even more of their momentum. And they're going to end up being overtaken by Kofu, I think, who are just behind them in ninth. We do have, as I mentioned, this season, it's kind of the reverse. You normally have the teams in the playoff positions with four games left who are all out of form. And there are like three teams behind them knocking on the door. And we're trying to work out which one of them is going to get in. It's almost the reverse this year, because the teams just on the fringe of the playoffs seem to be having a bit of a crisis of confidence at the moment, and Mito is certainly in that group. Yeah, I think they'll be gutted that they went in front away at Tokushima, as we mentioned at the weekend, but ended up coming away with nothing.
Yeah,
they've just not been. I think Mito have been my personal favourite team to watch this year. I accept that Tokushima probably better.
Yeah.
But I actually think, Yamagata and Mito have been good to watch for different reasons. I think in terms of just maximising the resources available, maybe.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, but I think they must go out and try and win this game. And I think that is very dangerous when you're playing against a team like Yamagata. And I think Mito the coach has to set them up to try and win this game. But that has the inherent risk of you might get caught on the counter, and I have a sneaking suspicion that that's what's going to happen here. And I think Mito might end up not winning. And I think that could be, it might not be fatal mathematically on Saturday tea time, but I think in the fullness of time, it'll prove to be, this was the one that they had to win, and they probably couldn't just about do it. But I'd love to be proved wrong, because I've seen Mito up there has been brilliant this season. And there's a possibility that Yamagata maybe are thinking that, well, we weren't really expecting automatic promotion. Playoff place is pretty much not exactly guaranteed, but looking good. They might have taken the foot off the pedal, and there's a chance that Mito could catch them cold. I mean, Mito are a good side at the end of the day, but they're just out of form. Look tired to me, look leggy. And I think they'll have to attack Yamagata, and that is not the position you want to be in. They have some very quick forwards. Their transition is very good on the counter. And I suspect they might catch Mito out here.
Yeah, I agree with almost everything you said there. I think, it's a bit odd to look at Mito in eighth and think, oh, and feel a little bit disappointed, because usually you'd think, oh, Mito in eighth. That's an outstanding season.
Yeah, but I think that's good though, because it shows that we're not patronising them anymore.
Yeah,
and we expecting. I fully expected them to be top six after the first 5 or 6 months of the season. I'm gutted on their behalf that they seem to be just falling short at the last.
Okay, so that wraps up the Saturday portion. On Sunday, Jeff against Kanazawa, John. Can I interest you in a bit?
Kanazawa were very impressive in dismantling Vivaran on the beach, Nagasaki.
Yes,
4-2 at the weekend. It's always impressive when you see players sort of jogging around during a match. It's not the pre-match warm-up. A lot of Nagasaki players kind of standing round as these goals rained in from Kanazawa. So, they were looking good, but they're out of the playoff picture, I think. Jeff, it's been a bad season. They did some good things at the weekend, but eventually lost 3-2, I think, away at Yamaguchi. Typical Jeff. The only The only good thing for me was seeing Alan Pinheiro assist the goal and score one himself, because I don't think Jeff fans have seen the best of him. But for my money, he's certainly a good player. Probably should have played more this season. I think this game will just have loads of goals, to be honest. Like literally, if I log into the J-League, go to the J-League, any numbers that appear here will not surprise me. But ultimately, I think it's a meaningless, it's a pretty meaningless match. But I don't know. Neither team is very, very predictable at the moment.
No, that is true. Get your money on a 0-0 after having said all that. A game that isn't meaningless is Yokohama FC's entertaining of Vivar and Nagasaki. You know, you just mentioned Vivar and on the beach Nagasaki. This is a game that, I mean, if they are on the beach, they're going to get a proper...
they're going to get some hand kicked in their faces.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because Shinsuke came to the party last week with his beautiful strike against Tokyo Verdy. Yokohama FC, they've got their eyes on the prize of second place, and I don't expect Nagasaki to stop that particular charge. I think there's too much momentum and too much... there's too much focus on Yokohama's FC side to let Nagasaki derail that. I don't see anything other than a Yokohama FC win here.
Yeah, I think Yokohama did well to win that game against Verdy, because they obviously had a bad day at the office the game before. They lost their unbeaten record, didn't they? The 19-match unbeaten run, losing 3-0 at Kyoto.
Yep.
So I think, yeah, I agree with you about the momentum. The only note of caution that I would sound is that it almost seems too easy, this game. Like, you know, Nagasaki were pretty terrible at Kanazawa, and it's another away game for them, and they're safe, and they're not going to make the playoffs. And Yokohama FC won at home, they've got another home game, and they're a better team. J2's burnt me before with games like this.
Yep.
And I just wonder if this is one of these... You know, the Yokohama FC goalkeeper could misjudge of something in the first minute, get a red card. You know, Nagasaki go 1-0 up with a penalty. I mean, we should mention, you know, the Goya meter is on 22 goals now, isn't it? And yeah, Verdy just briefly threatened to get back into this game in the second half when Lee Yongjik scored, pulled one back. And yeah, I don't know. I actually agree with you. I do think Yokohama will win this game, but I don't think it's going to be a processional thumping. I think it's going to be nervy and tense, and a lot will come down to Yokohama. You're really going to have to make Nagasaki work in the game and make them feel tired, and then they should be fitter, hungrier, and, to be honest, a better team and win. But I think this is, it looks suspiciously cut and dried on paper. I think the actual game might be a bit more complicated.
Yeah. Speaking of things that might seem cut and dried on paper, Tochigi are 6 points adrift from safety, as we've already mentioned earlier. They're hosting Leonardo and friends when Albirex Niigata come to town. I mean, if you're a Tochigi defender, quite frankly, after you've seen the game tonight and you've gone 6 points adrift of safety, probably the last thing you want is the best striker in the division, or the top goal scorer in the division, coming to town to, just to basically kind of puff his stats up, because he's going to shoot and his teammates going to give him the ball at every single opportunity they can. And because I think they want him to finish the season with 30 goals. I fear for Tochigi here, because I think psychologically the result tonight, even though they didn't play, I think the damage from this result that Kagoshima beat Gifu with is almost insurmountable, and I think Niigata will roll them over, and I think Leonardo will be in the goals again, although that's not an out on the limb prediction there, is it? Yeah.
It's not the hottest take.
No, I did promise. I did promise fire, but I haven't spat any fire yet.
Here's a quick hypothetical then. If you're Kazuaki Tasaka, the stony faced Tochigi SC manager, Do you start? Do you go all out to try and win this game, or do you accept that relegation looks pretty inevitable, and instead maybe try and go for a 0-0 so that you can, like, the goal now surely is to try and make sure you don't finish bottom and hope that Fujieda finish in the top two in J3. So do you think, because Tochigi are incredibly cagey. I mean, they don't look it, but they are quite cagey even when they play at home. It's one of the reasons they're in the mess they're in. I'd be tempted to just be like, guys, we're just going to try and get a draw, even keep the score down, because they are ahead of Gifu on goal difference, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of that, but
let's be honest, if Tochigi try and beat Niigata at football, it's going to go very badly.
Yeah, it's going to go Kagoshima style badly for them, I think. I mean, that's an interesting point. I think, and it'll speak to a bit of, like, game management, and it'll speak to forward thinking, pragmatic kind of thinking from a coach to try and what I wouldn't be surprised to see if Tochigi put two defensive midfielders in, and they put Henike, who is a midfielder by trade but has been playing up front the last few weeks. It wouldn't surprise me if they tried to nail down Leonardo with two covering players.
It's funny, I was going to make exactly the same point. I was going to say, from the starting formation, if Henick is in the defensive midfield position and not up front, that means they're going defensive.
I think it would be a way of having kind of some kind of flexibility, because if Henick is classed as he's obviously played forward this year, but if he's given the marking of a midfielder, then at least it gives them the flexibility to be able to change that later on. To be honest, I don't understand why teams wouldn't double mark Leonardo, because I mean, he's obviously the key to the way Niigata play. I mean, obviously he gets assists from all over the pitch, but without Leonardo, Niigata aren't half the team, and so
I think you have to choose to either man mark him, or I think teams realise he's a bit too slippery a customer and maybe try and cut off the supply instead.
Yeah.
So it might not be a case of man marking seems to be very out of fashion generally, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm just thinking that.
Mm. Yeah, and I think maybe teams, to be honest, you know, Leonardo's so mobile and mentally agile that I think if you were to designate someone to man mark him, you're almost putting yourself down to 10 men, because there's no guarantees that that player is going to be able to carry out the duties anyway.
Well,
I'd be tempted to say just cut off the supply to this player instead of actually trying to mark it. Don't wait till he's got the ball and then try and deal with him to make sure he doesn't get it in the first place.
Yeah, I suppose that. I mean, I would say that even if you send someone to run exactly where he goes all the time, that the idea would be, even if you feel you're going down to 10 men, then the hope would be that, yeah, exactly, well, yeah. Okay. I don't know.
I think it's an interesting managerial problem where, yeah, Tochigi sort of have to go for this game and sort of can't.
Yeah.
And they're inferior in every department, personnel-wise.
Yeah, it's not the ideal situation.
You've got nothing up your sleeve. So I suppose I'd argue against myself if I was the manager. I'd say, well, we'll just go for it then. We'll play with four up front. But I think Tasaka is not that kind of manager.
No, he's not.
He's been cagey all season, and it's going to be more of the same, I think.
Yeah, I think I expect Niigata to roll Tochigi. I don't even if Tochigi set up to be cagey, I think Niigata probably got too much. They don't have a lot to play for except getting Leonardo his goals, and I think I think that'll do for Tochigi. Ehime against Machida, I mean, we've already spoken about Ehime and their goalkeeper. I don't think he'll be dropped. He probably should be, but I don't think he will be. Machida coming off the back of a relatively uninspiring 0-0 home draw against Gifu last weekend. I think they're not mathematically safe, I think, for all intents and purposes, they are safe. Probably not much to look at here, I would say.
No, I think this will be a low-scoring, possibly zero-scoring game. Ehi may have pretty much stopped playing since they got to 39 points, haven't they? And Zelvia Machida just behind, but drawn four of the last five, so I think it's probably be something similar. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot to get excited about in this game, Stuart. I would think even if they turned up to play in your garden, you might be better off drawing the curtains. But we've been wrong before, but I think these two teams are just desperate for a holiday, aren't they?
Yeah.
Ehime have done okay up until the last couple of games where they've pretty much down tools. Match, there's been a very forgettable and disappointing campaign for a number of reasons, which we've dwelled on in previous pods. So I think both teams just want to get this game and the rest of the season just out of the way and regroup.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's been a disappointing season for both these teams, but it's a season that will ensure they'll be in J2 next year. So for looking at the wide lens view, it's a very successful season that they'll both be in this tier of football next year. The final game on Sunday is down in Yamaguchi. Renofa Yamaguchi are playing FC Ryukyu. Two teams with not the greatest defence in the world and some decent attacking players on show. I'd be surprised if this doesn't finish in a bit of a goal fest. I mean, you've got Uejo Satoki, we've already mentioned him. Renofa Yamaguchi have got a lot of good attacking players, and I think both teams will go out and go for it, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that the result tonight, Kagoshima beating Gifu, means that Ryukyu are mathematically safe.
Yes, they are.
So they can celebrate by going out and scoring loads of goals against Yamaguchi. And yes, as you mentioned, I think Yamaguchi will probably have a couple in the other net as well. So this could be another. This will be the sort of Jeff versus Kanazawa of the south of Japan, I think.
Was it?
I wanted to mention in the Yamaguchi game against Jeff, there was another Junichi Paolo Tanaka scored the winner.
He did.
But his header hit the underside of the crossbar and bounced down and hit the Jeff goalkeeper Yusato and went in. We're recording just before Halloween, not to reanimate a zombie issue from last week's pod, but I don't see how that can be his goal, because the ball didn't go in. It wasn't going in. It's an own goal for me, but yes, let's move on.
I was just going to say, what was I going to say?
Sato did not have his best game either in that match, has to be said. The first goal he let in was very soft as well.
You do surprise me. What was I going to say? Ryukyu is safe now, right?
Yes.
And I remember last year, when they finally clinched the title in J3, the game after that, they got humped 6-0 by Seretse under 23.
Right. Yeah,
so
I'd forgotten that. Yes, that's right.
I wonder if they've all gone out on the binge, the binge tonight and tomorrow, and they're going to get a good whacking by Renofa Yamaguchi this week. It's possible. You never know. You never know. It wouldn't surprise me if there were 6 goals in the game.
Unpredictable match again, I think.
Yes, yeah, we'll go with that one. And the last one is possibly the most interesting game of the weekend, John. We were talking about it before we started recording. It's Kyoto Sanga against Vanfori Corfu. Kyoto are in 7th on 62 points. Vanfori Corfu had a very disappointing 1-1 draw at home against Kagoshima United last weekend. This is unlosable for Corfu, right? If they lose, I would assume that they'll be done.
Yeah, I think that's right, because they'd be 5 or 6 points off the playoffs with 3 games to go. And they've not been very impressive recently, have they? No wins in the last 3.
Mm.
I'm like, you know, look at the squad and I think, well, I thought they'd be a pretty good shout for the top 6 at the start of this season, and they could still make it. But yes, they have to win the game. Just for anyone who's wanting to watch the game, it's on Monday afternoon because Monday is a national holiday in Japan. So this is a 2 o'clock kickoff on Monday. But I also think, to be honest, you could even make a case for saying it's a must-win game for Kyoto, because they were pretty dreadful in that 3-1 loss at Niigata the weekend, which was surprising because they played so well demolishing Yokohama FC at home the week before. So it really is a case now of Kyoto. We're not sure which Kyoto side's going to turn up. We're not really sure which Kofu side's going to turn up either. I think for me this has the kind of air of a bit of a shootout. I think both teams will have to go for the 3 points, and I think even if it's a draw, I'm not sure if that helps either side really.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I think you're right to say that Kyoto are slightly better off, but I still think they've wobbled a lot recently, including the last time out. So. I think this feels like a bit like a playoff before the playoffs for me.
A playoff before the playoffs. Well,
a pre-playoff.
Oh, nice
prime stage.
as it should be. I think that I don't think Kofu can afford to lose this. I think it's possible that Kyoto can lose and still find a way into the playoffs, but it's going to be a tricky one, and it's going to be quite difficult for them to for either side to bounce back from a defeat in this game. So, yeah. Well,
interesting looking at the running. You know, Kyoto are going to play Ryukyu away, then Jeff at home, but then they finish up away at Kashiwa. So
that's right. Yeah, they got Kashiwa last game.
I think they perhaps might only get another. Maybe I don't see them getting anything against Kashiwa, because that'll be Kashiwa's probably title parade, won't it? Procession. So I don't know. I'm just going to check Kofu live fixture check-in here. We'll just see what Kofu's running looks like after they play Kyoto on the weekend. They're going to play. Sorry, it's bad radio.
Dead air is a crime.
They host Fukuoka, travel to Gifu, and then host Ryukyu. So I could see Kofu winning 3 in a row.
Yeah, they could do. Yeah,
it's not beyond the realms of possibility. No. But then again, it's J2. So
nothing's beyond the realms of possibility.
Well, Gifu could go on a tear now, couldn't they? So
they could do. Say, keep the faith, Rich. Keep the faith. Before we wrap up tonight, we'll just have a quick look at the fixtures coming up in J3 this weekend. I think the biggest game is on Monday. Monday night. Why is it Monday night? 6 o'clock. He says, thinking out loud. It's Zaspa Kusatsu Gunma taking on Raso Kumamoto. Both teams run 50 points in third and fourth place, respectively. Leaders Girovans Kitakyushu hosting Blau Blitz Akita on Sunday, while second place Fujieda Mai FC are taking on Vanraure Hachinohe. The race for J3 title and promotion places is definitely hotting up. John, thanks for joining me this week. It's been difficult, I'm not gonna lie. I had to put a brave voice on and try and get through this after watching the crap that I had to watch earlier tonight, but thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem. It's always good to talk. And we decided to do the kind of throw forward pod and preview the weekend's games, because we think this is going to be available for download on Friday. Is that right, Stuart? So it made more sense to do a kind of preview than a review this week. So I hope listeners appreciate that and enjoy the previews this week. Enjoy the football weekend. And we'll speak to you again soon. I think you're off on your travels now, Stuart. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going on my holidays next week. I can't say where, because I don't want to alert the paparazzi to my movements. But somewhere it will be safe, possibly sunny, definitely, and there'll be plenty of alcoholic beverages and
I had no idea what was coming now.
easy. Plenty of
DAZN logins.
Quite possibly. I'm not sure the other half would be completely down with that. But I'll be on my holidays next week, and so you might not get a pod next week, but that only means I'll be coming back the week after with double the vibrancy and double the energy. So yeah, get ready for that. I'd just like to thank the patrons who contribute to this podcast. They, you know who you are. And I just like to say a big thank you to them. This podcast wouldn't be possible without people's contributions. If you do like what we're doing, or if you kind of want to contribute to our cause, you can follow a link. I'll post a link to the Patreon on my Twitter page. There's one on the Big Pod page as well. And people donate from as little as $1 a month, and so it all goes in the well, and it all goes to helping us produce this content for you. So having said that, I just like to give a big thanks to all the listeners, whether you're Patreon subscribers or not, and hopefully we'll be back with you in a couple of weeks' time. In the meantime, enjoy the football, and I'll speak to you all next time. Bye for now.